francês. Vamos começar pelo canal francês. Pierre, pedi-lhe para ligar o microfone e falar no canal francês. Obrigado.
Distinguished delegate, dear guests, it is a pleasure for us to start the second day of the inaugural session of the PAM Women Parliamentary Forum, and we start with the session dedicated to gender equality in Euro-Mediterranean Gulf countries, perspective in a post-pandemic era. And I have the pleasure to hand over to Honorable Pedro Roque, who is Vice President of PAM and President Emeritus. Pedro, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Sergio. Good morning, everyone. I will switch to Portuguese my intervention.
Distinguished guests, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it is for me a pleasure and a great honor to welcome you to the home of democracy in my country, Portugal. I'm also privileged to be a man to moderate a session of this important inaugural session of the APM Parliamentary Women's Forum. It's a clear sign that this forum is important to men and women. The theme of this session, as mentioned, is gender equality in the Euro-Mediterranean and Gulf countries, perspectives in a post-pandemic era, a central theme for present and future activities. Since the beginning of the pandemic, women have played a significant role at the forefront of the fight against COVID-19, mainly in the health and education sector, but also at the family level, as they have had the greatest responsibility to match their professional duties, mostly by teleworking, with distance learning of their children and household tasks. It was also women who experienced the greatest economic difficulties, as they were the most affected by unemployment. It should also be noted that violence against women and girls has increased in the context of social isolation by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, there have been substantial differences. No nation can affirm that it has achieved full equal gender equality, so women continue on still facing a huge challenge. Women represent half of the world's population, but many face discrimination at work, healthcare, and education, and they are underrepresented in most decision-making bodies and at the top of public bodies and companies. In many professions, they continue to earn significantly less than men in the same position and are more likely to take precarious and low-paid jobs. In many parts of the world, girls are still more likely to drop out of school compared to boys. The scourge of violence against women is a central issue at international level. No nation is immune to this crime. According to World Health Organization data, 1 in 3 women around 736 million is subject to physical or sexual violence by their partner or sexual violence by a non-partner. Discrimination and violence against women are rooted in gender stereotypes, harmful cultural norms, and discriminatory legislation. Some women face early or forced marriage or female genital mutilation. Unequal social and legal status prevents women and girls from enjoying their human rights in all areas of their lives, from maternal and health services to education, equal opportunities, and fair remuneration. Although there are currently more women elected to parliaments, full equality is still very far away and progress is taking place slowly. Most parliaments are still heavily dominated by men, and some do not even have any female parliamentaries, although they're rare. Even where women are present in the largest number, the majority of top positions are attributed to men. Women candidates for elections face numerous challenges, including addressing discrimination or cultural beliefs that limit their role in society. Balancing private, family, and political life, getting support from political parties, and getting funding for the campaign. Many of them also face violence, harassment, intimidation, even by the media outlets. Some women may even be deterred from running for positions, leaving men in positions of power. Ladies and gentlemen, parliaments must be places where human rights are equal, regardless of gender. They should also be places where sexist language or behavior is not tolerated. Inclusive governance and laws are essential to ensure women's participation and active leadership of women in response to COVID-19. Moreover, sustainable employment and entrepreneurship can only be possible if women are involved in public and social infrastructures. New policies should preserve women's micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises and ensure their sustainability through access to technology, training, markets, and innovative institutional financing. Finally, ensuring inclusive quality and sustainable health systems and support services for victims of gender-based violence should ensure the physical, emotional, and socioeconomic security of all women. Such services should also provide maternal health, and especially for the most deprived women. In this context, it's essential that the crime against domestic violence be considered as a public crime. In other words, dispensing the need from a complaint of the victim so that authors can start the investigating procedures and accusation. I'm convinced that the Parliamentary Women's Forum will address all these issues and present some concrete solutions. I would like to thank you for your attention, and now we're opening on the floor to listen to different presentations.
Here a statement from the Speaker of the Parliament of Montenegro. This speech will be read by Honorable Miloslava Paunovic, MP from Montenegro and member of the delegation of that parliament to PAM. Honorable Miloslava, you have the floor.
Thank you. Dear ladies and gentlemen, dear Mrs. Lima, dear Mr. Roque, dear Mr. Piazzi, your excellencies. My name is Miloslava Paunovic. I'm a member of the Parliament of Montenegro. As our esteemed President of the Parliament of the Montenegro, Ms. Daniela Djurović, was unable to participate in this unique event, I will be pleased to read out her speech. With special pleasure, I would like to sincerely thank you on behalf of the Parliament of Montenegro and my behalf for the invitation, but primarily for this initiative that through women's energy, their perception of reality, unique sensibility, and the necessity for a better future is surely a very, very significant indicator of democratic processes and universal values that we truly advocate as a Mediterranean family. Directed at the postulates of tolerance, mutual respect, and equality. As a woman who was elected President of Parliament of Montenegro after 20 years, I'm deeply honored to express my open satisfaction on the occasions of the establishment of the Women's Parliamentary Forum of the Mediterranean Parliamentary Assembly concerning the existence of such a format that directly forces emancipation of women and creates a practical necessity for women to be inseparable and integral part of the political, business and social processes in our region and beyond the greatest extent possible. I'm pleased that the PAM, which is being addressing gender issues and increasing the number of women in political life since 2005, has established this forum, which for all of us, I'm certain, is a confirmation of understanding of the need to offer room for debate on all obstacles that women are faced within modern societies, with a focus on current issues of refugee women in 2022 and gender equality in our regions after the pandemic, which will be topic of specifically this event. Lastly, I would like to highlight that the Parliament of Montenegro established the Women MP Group in the last year's first quarter, comprising women members of all political parties represented in the Parliament. The Women MP Group, which is very active in its operation, means a common above-party political activism, conveying a strong message of united women solidarity and having an undoubtable clear intention to ensure significant and visible result in the area of gender equality and equal opportunities for all of us. Once again, Your Excellencies, with the expression of my special esteem, I congratulate you on the establishment of the Women Parliamentary Forum, and I wish you all the luck, continuity, and specific indicators for operation of this very important segment of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean. Yours sincerely, President of the Parliament of Montenegro, Daniela Đurović. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Honourable Milosava. Please convey our best regards to Madam Speaker of the Montenegrin Parliament. Et maintenant, en français, c'est avec grand plaisir qu'on aura.
And now it's a pleasure for us to listen to the Minister of Solidarity, Social Inclusion and the Family of Morocco. Minister, you have the floor, and thank you for being present. Thank you very much, Honorable. Mrs. Juana Lima, head of the Portuguese delegation, His Excellency Ambassador Sergio of APM, Secretary General of APM, members, Parliament members. First of all, I'd like to thank the kind invitation addressed to be able to participate and intervene at the inaugural session of the Women Parliamentary Forum, PAM, on gender equality in Euro-Mediterranean and Gulf countries, perspectives in a post-pandemic era. This is a topic which is very important to us. And let me congratulate you for your initiative regarding the creation of this Women Parliamentary Forum, and also in terms of your continued effort in protecting women's rights. Let me grasp this part, this opportunity to congratulate all women in the Mediterranean and Gulf countries for their very determining action from the pandemic in terms of education, health, and others. Morocco, under the clear vision of the King Mohammed VI, wants to prioritize the women's right in relation to the significant advance, either at legislative, political level, aiming at improving women's conditions. This progress has been enhanced by the last decree, June 2022, 2022, which allowed us to set up an equality committee. Ladies and gentlemen, following the efforts carried out of our country in taking specific measures to accelerate effective equality between men and women, in terms of political participation, a positive dynamic where all have been involved, institution, governmental, policy bodies, and political parties. So women have been able to occupy very important roles in political parties as secretary general or even president of a national board. And also our country has adopted for 2021 an organic law aiming at increasing women's representation in terms of local authorities and others, and we have adopted provisional measures in terms of regulatory legislation regarding the elections according to Article 4 of our convention, allowed to be able to obtain different results, that is where the women's percentage has known a remarkable evolution, that is 35% in 2021 as opposed 6%, that is as opposed to 4.2. So the women's head count went from 81 to 96 in 2021 at the level of the representatives chamber with a representative of 24.3%. So our country also has been equipped with different laws to establish equality and to increase women-men priority in different positions, which are quite important, that is, in terms of women being involved in political action. So Law 19-2021 has established a mandatory quota aiming at 20% of women in board of directors until 2024 and 45% until 2027. This law also imposed in Article 27 to respect the principle of parity between men and women as stipulated in Article 19 of our Constitution, and according to which board of directors increasing women's participation. They're also presidents of different council for human rights, Court of Auditors, and others. So let me continue. The new government is counting on has six women ministers with very important being in charge of important ministries, and the region of Manuel has a woman as president of the Association of the Moroccan Region, and also three women were elected mayor of big cities in Morocco, like Rabat, Casablanca, and Marrakech. Morocco also is very much involved in a regional international level to implement different international engagement in terms of international convention, the CEDAW, and I would like to also mention the adhesion in April of 2022 of Morocco to the optional protocol of the convention eliminating all forms of discrimination relating to women, and will be enforced in July 2022. So, and also the Moroccan delegation that I have the honor to preside and chair, and I'd like we submitted Morocco's report in terms of combating any forms of discrimination in Geneva. Morocco was congratulated for the progress shown in promoting women's rights. So it shows the importance, resilience of women, promotes their condition in armed conflicts and in the management of humanitarian, sanitary crisis, health crisis, that is. The kingdom has been much involved and has been developing many efforts, means to apply the 1325 resolution of the Security Council through by launching the first action plan of Morocco for the National Action Plan for Women and Security, March 2022, which enhances the link between on the SDG 516 and also strengthens the women's role as actors of change and partners, equal partners in the decision-making process. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other hand, within the scope to enhance women's situation and protection, different forms of violence, Morocco adopted Law 10313 in 2018, which allows to protect women against violence. Ladies and gentlemen, within the scope of this follow-up of the different engagements, Marrakesh Declaration launched 2020. Under the effective presidency of Her Royal Highness Miriam, Morocco implemented the protocol protecting women against violence, and also this allowed to implement the territorial protocol for protecting women, which we signed as ministry with 44 associations, partnerships to implement in the territory this territorial protocol, which aims at in 20 to which aims at in providing different centers. We also launched the Empower Academy for Women, and its role is to strengthen women's access to training, namely in accessing rights, knowledge, without age or diploma being a constraint. In 2026, we want to increase men's, we want to promote women's activities. Our social ministry for family, in terms of governmental programs, has implemented a green strategy, inclusive smart social regeneration, which allows to improve the economic social integration of women at a territorial level, namely in rural areas. We launched also a program to monitor, to accompany many women this year with the region, council and provinces of Morocco to be able to accompany, as I said, 36,000 women to carry out an economic activity this year. And also, I'd like to reiterate my thanks to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean for having invited me to participate. I hope your works are productive, and let me congratulate your initiatives and to address the different challenges linked to parity and for an inclusive, for the promotion of wanting more women to be involved. Because of the Mediterranean's fact of being the cradle in terms of peace, tolerance, and sharing.
Merci beaucoup, Madame, et merci pour votre participation dans la séance et pour votre vision.
Thank you very much for participating, and especially for giving us the vision of the King of Mohammed VI, and also. We will be listening to. We'll be now listening to a video message which has been recorded by member of the European Parliament, Isabel Sanch of Portugal.
Hello, I would like to start by thanking the organization for inviting me to participate in this inaugural session of the Women Parliamentary Forum. I'm sorry for not being able to be in Portugal with all of you, but due to this being a plenary session week in the European Parliament, it was impossible to be in Strasbourg and in Lisbon at the same time. During the COVID-19 crisis, the widespread adoption of telework coincided with an increase in women's unpaid work. Before the pandemic, women employed within the EU spent about 3.9 hours per day on unpaid work, whereas employed men spent 2.6 hours. In 2020, these numbers rose for employed women with children to 7.7 hours per day, and for employed men with children to 4.5 hours. Women around the world have been deeply affected affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, which has highlighted persisting inequalities and has dealt a major setback across all areas, especially with respect to intimate partner violence and women's economic participation. Regarding women entrepreneurship, Europe and MENA region are below the global percentage of 6.2% of women who own established business, with 5.3% in Europe and 4.5% in the MENA region. Despite strong variations amongst countries, entrepreneurship in the Euro-Mediterranean region continues to be a male face. Women's economic participation in the Euro-Mediterranean region continues to face many issues. These result from difficulties on accessing business support services and networks, from a limited access to productive and financial resources, and from lack of training opportunities, among others. These numbers should leave us all worried, especially in face of our targeted goals for the Agenda 2020, and in particular on the Sustainable Development Goal 5, achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls. We still have much to do regarding this in our region. Gender equality must be based on equal access to education from young age until adulthood. Programs to motivate girls and their families to go to school and to finish the education cycles must be deployed in countries, and they should be complemented by laws that guarantee an equal access to work and technical jobs. This is something that we at the European Parliament have been diligently working on. In 2021, the European Parliament, leading by example, adopted a roadmap to achieve gender equality in political processes and its own administration. We aim to achieve by 2024 50% of women in middle and senior manager positions and 40% of women in top manager positions in the administration. Currently, that number is only 24 for top managers. On the political side, the European Parliament committed itself to strengthening the gender impact analysis of all legislation and to improving gender balance in the leadership of committees and delegations and in the selection of external experts on panels or as authors of studies. In matters of representation in elected members, the European Parliament is a good example. In the first directly elected European Parliament in 1979, representation of women stood only on 15.2%, but the percentage of female members has gone up each election. Currently, almost 14% of elected members are women. Our current president is a woman, and of the 27 member states, only one does not have a woman as an elected member of the European Parliament. To finish my already long speech, I would just like to say that this proactive engagement with gender equality that we have been trying to achieve in the European Parliament should be replicated worldwide and, of course, in the Euro-Mediterranean and Gulf countries. We have to understand the difficulty starting point in many areas, but it is a fundamental task that we as parliamentarians have to embrace together, together as one. Forums like these are very important as places where we can exchange experiences that can be used to overcome the challenges still faced in both margins of the Mediterranean. for these discussions, we should find ideas and replicate best practices to progress towards gender parity. If we take into account that after the pandemic and around the world, more than 435 million women and girls will be surviving on less than €2 per day, the responsibility to do more and to do better is even more important than ever before. Thank you very much. Hope, see you soon.
Foi então a participação da nossa...
So, this was the presentation of Isabel Santos, a former member of our parliament, and she's a member of the European Parliament, as she's mentioned, presided by a woman, Roberta Metsola from Malta. And now, I have the special pleasure to give the floor to my dear friend Monique Freire, Director of Geneva Office, United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, and she will be present online. Monica is also a former parliamentarian from the Portuguese Parliament. Monica, you have the floor.
Olá, bom dia a todos e a todas.
Good morning, everyone. I'm just concluding some technical things, but again, let me thank the privilege it is for me to be able to participate. I'd like to also thank my dear friend Pedro Roque. We spent quite a lot of time during this legislature in Parliament. The scenario is a bit different. So I'm trying to help to build more decent options for everyone in an international setting. Let me start to say that it's quite an honor to be able to address the Portuguese Parliament. Pedro Roque has just referred that I was also a parliamentarian, and I've always recognized the importance of such forums led by women, giving them space and voice to women perspectives. So let me say that I'm quite emotional to be able to participate at this inaugural session of the Women Parliamentary Forum of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean. And it's with humbleness that I like to recall that those that have the legitimacy and authority are you. In the United Nations, we have the responsibility to implement your national and international commitments in translating them into programs and in the field and carry out the different actions to turn the world into a more decent one and eliminating obstacles. So I work for the United Nations, as it was referred. I am director of the Geneva office for UNFPA. I'd like to say that we were created in 1979 in a special context where the world was afraid of an exponential increase of the population not accompanied by sufficient resources. And so this UNFPA is an entity created by the United Nations organization to provide technical assistance to the states on demographic evolution, on the evolution, providing technical assistance in terms of data. So for countries to have more concrete data in terms of social economic development, and time went by, and we're still working in that area, which is very important, that is conducting census. We provide technical assistance to statistical institutions. We help countries to react to some questions, providing us with a more detailed analysis on what is on their population so that we can increase different thresholds. And as And as I've just mentioned, our mandate transforming itself in 1994 at an international conference on development, on population development, this fund presented a revolutionary paradigm, especially in terms of human rights. So this United Nations Population Fund, in terms of sexual reproduction and others, works in different areas aiming at guaranteeing the access of all to sexual reproductive aspects, eliminating and overcoming different obstacles. And that is why some of you know our work quite well in eliminating child marriages. Others also know our work in terms of eliminating female genitalization. Others know our work in maternal aspects and others, and others also know our work in terms disabled population, migrants, refugees, the elderly, and why we focus on these groups is that if the Agenda 2030 is not to leave anyone behind, we need to be in the forefront, especially regarding those that have been left behind, more behind in terms of decision-making process, monitoring, implementing programs, and so on. So always women and the youth, those in a vulnerable situation, but they were the ones in such situation. Our agenda is very wide. We have 130 offices in many countries, programs in partnership with the government, involving the parliamentarians at different levels, and also civil society organizations, such which are our implementation partners. And our agenda goes through by saying very clear yesterday, at the Council of Human Rights, I was able to say so, what I will be mentioning. Investing in women and girls is investing in the present and the future of the world, and in this case, in that region. There is no country in the world that can really say it has achieved equal gender equality, and the region we're focusing on is not an exception. And indeed, all over the world, unbalanced powered relations, economic challenges, climate change, conflict have made this situation even more preoccupying. We had also COVID-19 pandemic, which had quite a disproportionate impact on women, and setbacks exist because of gender equality. We worked quite a lot with women. We had the Notion data about crimes against women and others, paving the road, therefore, for political representation equality, decision-making process, unpaid care, healthcare professionals. So we did, it was a wake-up call. In April, we published a document of political guidelines which mentioned something which was very central. Be aware of this disproportionate impact and any impact it will have on women. Please adopt a gender guideline. And we've approved the fundamental pillar in terms of human rights, different approaches, which is being celebrated, which is participation. We've heard quite often at different levels in other forms, no one stands alone, so again, we need to include women. And as was mentioned by the COVID-19 pandemic and responses, is to think of everyone and to accept everyone as they are. So we wanted to know what was the pandemic's and how it affected gender equality. For instance, what would be the impact on accessing family planning and services? What would be the impact in the violence against women? And in practice, in adverse and harmful practices like child marriages and female genitalization, mutilation. So in terms of supply chains with closed airports, borders, left 40 million women in countries with low income, with no access to contraception. And this is where we, this is what we mentioned, and fortunately, not very far from what we were able to see, but this led to 4 million of unplanned pregnancies, unplanned, without speaking of STDs, which increased because we were no longer able to distribute condoms. And also the fact of different medical hospital services which had to be reorganized to respond to the COVID pandemic. This implied the closing of sexual reproductive services and natal ones. Many midwives were reallocated, and many women told us because of COVID no longer came to the hospital for a prenatal appointment because they were afraid to be afraid of being infected. And also, let me draw your attention to what we also verified, the increase of gender-based violence. And it's true. The numbers have shown that during the closing of these services, gender-based violence increased to alarming levels because of the interesting responses that were provided by the states, because they understood that this was very important to respond to. And only to and also to conclude, we also worked on different impacts related to the pandemic, and this is on linked to gender. The setbacks, delay in terms of child marriages and female mutilation, we saw that there were over 2 million cases until the end of the decade and could have been avoided. And in terms of child marriage, 3 million or 13 million at the end of this decade could have been avoided. The impact is a catastrophic one. One in three women suffers on gender-based violence, suffered from gender-based violence, and we heard the Undersecretary General of the United States, two in three women suffered or know someone that suffered from gender-based violence. And at the World Economic Forum, the COVID impact is still has still shown very big effects. The gender gap increased. It was foreseen that it would take 99 years, and now it's going to take 135 years. At a pace that we had in 2021, we foresee that that gender equality takes 133 years, and others, in terms of politics, 146, economic and health, and so on. So also, it is also mentioned by the World Bank, the steps giving gender gaps can be potentially closed in 52 years in Western Europe and 61 years in North America and about 69 years in Latin America and Caribbean. In all regions of the world, it's going to take 100 years to close the gender gap, 120 years in Sub-Saharan Africa, 141 years in East and Central Europe, and 165 years in Asia, in Southeast Asia, the Pacific, 142 years in North of Africa, Middle East, and 145 years in Southeast Asia. So it doesn't have to happen as such. What the pandemic has shown is that investments can speed up, can accelerate gender equality, and also can eliminate some of the consequences which are more negative, not only inequality, not only the inequality that existed before the pandemic, but worsened because of the pandemic. And from this point of view, we've shown in a very detailed way with data, with populational maps, that investments in sexual reproductive health are essential. Sexual reproductive health rights should be an integrating part of any response, any plan responding to COVID-19 and our efforts to achieve a universal culture in the 2030 agenda should include more of these health, more of this, should integrate this healthcare and primary healthcare for, especially for refugees, guaranteeing that women and girls have access to services, sexual reproductive health care during the pandemic, so that these women and girls can be provided quality health care, maternal health care. They were capable of finding midwives that could provide the services in remote areas, through hotlines, telemedicine, and other, even through the social networks and messages, text messages, maintaining the supply chain, not only in terms of contraception, but in global terms, was essential to ensure the dignity of women and girls, and also of men and boys. And our work in this area is always to ask who's been left behind. And that is why we are constantly developing different mapping exercises to identify where lies these populations and what are the responses that could be provided. And that's why I'd like to congratulate the mechanism, fundamental mechanisms, gender equality for the Euro-Mediterranean region, which offers very interesting tips, not only in terms of reflection, but for the decision-making process. And I've read it quite carefully. And I'm not going to highlight the many the interesting data which is referred in that document, but just to emphasize the idea that in the Euro-Mediterranean zone, gender parity in Western, in Eastern Europe can be achieved in 55 years, in Western Africa, Western Europe, sorry, and in the in Africa it will take a lot longer. So again, it's worthwhile to invest in general equality in terms of women in a working age in the region could add $3.1 billion to regional wealth, as mentioned by the World Bank. So what we are discussing today is not only a measure in human rights, it's not only a measure, not discussing only a measure of good policies, good management, it's also a measure which is very important at an economic level. The report, for those that did not read it, provides us with a good knowledge. That is, all countries in the European Mediterranean region have laws, constitutions promoting gender equality, and many of them have shown that there's quite a considerable effort to develop budgets, not only gender sensitive, but budgets that are responsive to the different impact that all measures have on the gender, and also regarding the women's political participation. This really shows that this it shows that in the report, it's a challenge in terms of work-life balance. So we've just heard Isabel Santos mentioning the weight and what was worsened by the pandemic. We also heard the Women's Entrepreneurship Europe and the Middle East region. The percentage is quite low in the overall, and women leadership, all efforts.
All of these efforts aim at having higher representation of women in parliaments and several regional and national structures, and also leads to a a balance which is mitigated through our fight. In other words, if we have a great awareness of what has to be done, and if we have this awareness on what has to be done in terms of gender equality, this will give us all the possibility of participating in the destinations at a macro and a micro level. I'm talking about the political level, such as the one in which you are met today, where you find yourselves today, but I'm also referring to the translation of these programs into the field and in assessing in monitoring these programs and, if need be, in the correction thereof. And I would also like to leave you some clues for these possibilities, and also to say that this organization has offices in many countries that are represented under this structure, and we would like to work together with you so these ideas and suggestions can become reality. And in my final remarks, I would like to say and to stress something that previous speakers have said before me, and which is the fact that this pandemic has brought to our memory how dependent we are on unpaid women labor. Women dominate the economy of care as caregivers, and so this accounts for unpaid salary and unpaid labor. And this is a burden that has only increased during the pandemic. And according to an inquiry that we've carried out in several countries, we realized that more than half of women with children at home dedicated more than 5 hours a day taking care of their children. And despite the fact that the unpaid labor continues to sustain global economy, this is still unrecognized and not taken into account in national economies nor at the political decision levels. And this, of course, has a direct impact on the relative economic and social position of women. We know that 740 million women work at the level of informal economy, where very often we see insecurity, precariousness, low level of conditions. And the pandemic has only attracted more and more women to these situations. The pandemic has also highlighted the need for massive investment in the national healthcare systems, which have to be or want to be universal and resilient, and which have to be guided in order to dedicate themselves to specific needs, and which, of course, must have the necessary staff. We all know that there are intrinsic benefits to this democracy because these services are essential and they transform the society. I've also said that the access to services and products of high quality at the level of sexual health, this will certainly influence the decisions women can take all along their lives and economic lines, and they also determine their economic participation. On the other hand, we have been working with governments in order to ensure that the answers and the plans of answer and the recovering plans by government take into account the impact, the single and unequal impact the pandemic has had on women, and also by seeing how they can answer to gender-based violence and also to fundamental services. We are talking about building more equalitarian societies. We're talking about women at the center of decision-making processes in order to understand the unproportional impact of the pandemic by creating an answer to the pandemic-raised issues. But this should not be a mere tick-the-box type of exercise. The work is this has to be a bolder and more correct courageous exercise. I know that I've used my time, but I'm so passionate about this topic, and I would still like to leave you with three ideas. First, to prioritize policies that support gender equality, including women, and also including the assets to modern contraceptive medicines, and that childcare can be accessible, and also to offer shared parentality models. The second idea is that you should fight and legitimately so, since you have the capacity of transforming structural barriers, discriminatory laws and social rules which limit the economic opportunities of women, thus bringing about gender inequalities in terms of payment, access to funding, pension and also protection issues. And my last request is that you should work in order to cut the statistic invisibility, and this is one of the most perverse forms of exclusion. We need data, aggregated data around age, sex, and other economic factors that are relevant. And this should be used in order to give us a better understanding of a more detailed understanding of the cross-sectionalities, discriminations which overlap and which make this burden even heavier and which highlight gender equality. But on the other hand, we should also bring about a better knowledge of all of these inequalities at the level of social and reproductive health. So this is an effort to be made by each and all of us. And once more, let me finish by greeting the establishment of this Women Parliamentary Forum, wishing you a very inspired work, a very creative one, because I'm sure that we will all continue to deal with new problems and which we can understand more and better, but not through old tools. What we want is equality, and this means that we want to use this moment in order, which has to do with the populations of our countries, the tremendous percentage of women and girls and other types of populations which are highly vulnerable, and so that we can make our region in the world a region where we can live with more dignity and dignity. Muito obrigado, Mónica.
It's always a pleasure to see you and to listen to you, even in a virtual way. So it is my pleasure now to give the floor to Honorable Dehar Al-Falazi from the United Arab Emirates in his capacity of PAM Special Representative on Children and Armed Conflict and Victims of Terrorism. Honorable Al-Falazi will talk about the subject of the forced marriage. You have the floor.
أصحاب المعالي، أصحاب السعادة، الحضور الكريم، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. سأستهل كلمتي بكلمات من الكاتبة الإماراتية مسك السويدي، وهي: لست بدمية ولا سلعة تباع، طفلة أرجو البراءة للضياع.
And I would also like to greet you all and to say that although I am not a doll, nor a good that has to be sold, I am a child, and I hope and desire my innocence and not the loss of it. My dream is pink and it has disappeared. It is important to talk or to hear. when, ladies and gentlemen, when we find ourselves under living a phenomena which violates the dream and the innocence of childhood, we feel that we are away from our dreams. And when we are weak before the pain felt by minor children, we see that they are transformed into the brides of death, with whom a group of certain persons are, of course, have extinguished from their hearts, and they are blind in their minds. We see, on the other hand, that they found in violation of their rights and their innocence of childhood what they do in their animal thirst. Today, we are before a phenomenon which is not less dangerous than the terrorist phenomena, because it negotiates the life and the dreams of children and their future and their right to freedom. On the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, we see that this phenomenon of the marriage of minors, or in other words, the brides of death, is now visible. Ladies and gentlemen, the marriage of minors is a global phenomenon which reaches the roots of our society. On the other hand, this cuts the physical, spiritual, and human rights. On the contrary, this has also put infancy away from its right place. Consequently, the marriage of minors has become one of the basic costumes of these groups of people who have no sufferance, who have no mercy. And on the other hand, wars and armed conflicts and sectarian conflicts have held a predominant role in disseminating this phenomenon, with its consequences for the individual, the family, and society, such as poverty, hunger, and also this has made victims, a lot of victims. Family is not has no other resource but to accept forced and unequal marriage. We don't want to go on this emotional note, despite the fact that this greatly impacts the souls. We don't want to talk the language of figures. What we want, however, is to say that more than 150 million girls can become young brides until 2013, according to the UNFPA. So these women, this number may reach 310 million until 2015. In Yemen, Yemen is a country where women are treated as a property following the tradition of Queen Bilqis. Yemenite women today are the worst forms of suffering, and the rights of children and girls are also strongly violated. The report disseminated by the International Studies Center shows that Yemen is ranked in the 13th position amongst the 20 countries classified as the worst in terms of minor or child brides. I would also like to say that the UN report shows that 52% of girls and men at the Yemen, they have married before reaching the age of 18 years in 2017, and that the number of cases has tripled until the year 2018. According to international UN statistics, nearly 4 million girls with less than 15 years are married in Yemen. And the UNFPA for Children estimates that 72% of Yemenite girls are married as a child, so before reaching the age of 18. There is no doubt that this phenomenon is exacerbated by the terrorist militia Houthi. And on the other hand, we know that there is no doubt that this phenomenon is one that has most contributed towards the suicidal rates, and they confirm that nearly 105 suicides have been committed. And this is the reality of the child brides. This is the pain of the violated innocence. And so what are we to do? And this phenomena will continue to be translated into mere figures that will clearly increase. A day will come, however, where the cries of these girls will arrive to the conscience of all of us in this world. And according to the language, we say that we are minor girls who need dolls to play and not dolls of death for others to play with. And once again, we know that this study by the UN has shown that one out of five girls are displaced, and that these women are also part of of this type of ill treatment.
فتاة من دون الخامسة عشر تزوجت في اليمن وتشير التقديرات منظمة الأمم المتحدة للطفولة.
So this the United Nations Fund for Infancy estimates that more than 72% of girls in Yemen marry even when they are children. This is quite a nightmare for girls and women in those countries, especially, ladies and gentlemen, especially in relation to these different cases. This is the reality of underage children. So what should we do? This is the percentage of numbers which is clearly increasing. And we will be listening to the different cries. We need to listen to the cries of these girls. As was said, we're not dolls that you play with.
Recently today, I saw a cartoonist in Yemen, but I think it is in front. I will not finish. This picture is a thousand words. What's happening in Yemen with the girls? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, my dear Al-Falazi. Before we proceed, some informations. We are a little bit behind schedule, so we have to make some kind of adaptation of this session. So I'd like to inform you that we will suspend the coffee break, but nevertheless, the coffee break is there. If you want, you can serve yourself during the session. So I'll switch to Portuguese. Vamos agora ouvir a intervenção de Sandra Ribeiro, presidente da CIG, Comissão para a Cidadania e Género de Portugal.
Let's listen to Sandra Ribeiro, President of the Commission for Citizenship and Gender. President, Vice President, Emeritus Vice President, and a moderator of this panel, head of the Portuguese delegation for the PAM, and illustrious distinguished guests. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. And also, good morning to those following us online, listening to us online. It's quite an honor to be able to speak in this home of democracy, being part of such an inclusive event as the Women Parliamentary Forum. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to listen to the many speeches. I heard with quite a lot of interest the minister, Deputy Minister of Parliamentary Affairs, saying that she had heard an expression that had marked us, which would be a metaphor comparing men and women to the wings of a bird. And from yesterday, and using technology, Google, I was able to search a little bit more about the phrase, and I've learned that it's a phrase which is part of a speech of a religious leader, Iranian leader, Abdu'l-Bahá, which was said in 1912 at a visit which occurred to the United States of America, Canada, and they asked him to enact universal peace, and it was very important, and that I've been studying for some time, gender equality and its dimension between men and women, and I did not know about this old philosophical current in the 20th century defended that equality between men and women is the only path for progress, and I'm going to quote, humanity has two wings, female and male, and when these two wings are not equivalent in strength, the bird will not fly. While women achieve the same power as men fully in different areas of activity, development and progress from humanity won't be achieved. When the two wings become equivalent in strength, enjoying effectively the same rights and duties, the flight of society will be quite high and extraordinary. Therefore, women should receive the same education as men, and all inequalities should be adjusted so that this equality is not established. Real progress, human fulfillment will not happen. And again, it's also interesting that one of the news that we've heard being mentioned all over the world and in a social network, on the social network, is an excerpt of the interview of Boris Johnson, UK's Prime Minister, and he states, and also I'm going to refer, I'm convinced that Putin was a woman, this invasion of Russia, from Russia to Ukraine, wouldn't have happened. And probably other solutions to solve the conflict would have been found. Other solutions would have been found if it would have been a woman. We don't know if the thought of the British Prime Minister right or wrong, because we don't know how to confirm it. We don't have enough women in political roles to affirm surely that they're not in favor of the war as men. So we need more women in parliament, more women in governments all over the world, so that we can make that affirmation with confidence. But it's most likely that maybe the Prime Minister of Britain is quite right in relation to what he said. I've been invited to speak to you about my perception as President of the Commission for Citizenship and Gender. It's a public service under that belongs to the state, which listen and to policy as on gender equality in Euro, Mediterranean, and Gulf countries in a post-pandemic era. The task did not seem very easy at the beginning, but in spite of all differences that our countries can present, which are surely many differences, namely cultural differences, there is, however, a macro analysis which can be conducted in all our countries. There are still gender inequalities. In all our countries, men and women have an unequal representation in political system. You have more men than women in parliament, more men than women in government, more men and then women in political parties and leadership roles. For example, the Portuguese case. In the Portuguese case, there's the parity law, which is in force, and this parity law has changed everything. Indeed, today we have practically 40% of women in our parliament, but this wouldn't have happened if we did not have a law, a quota law. The same thing happened with management roles in public companies, where we can see there's a problem with career advancement. But also, Portugal at the moment has enforced a law, a quota law, which obliges that executive positions comply with a representation balance criteria of the sex underrepresented, which are women. There are also pay differences, consequence of an academic professional segregation, imbalancement of social recognition of what are women's, what is women's work. We have more women in given areas such as care, education, and having men choosing more academic professional careers in terms of engineering, in technological areas, inclusive in including also the digital one. There's also a pay gap which exists corresponding to different positions. And in our countries, there's a strong imbalance in terms of chores. Women carry out more chores than men. In Portugal, women carry out more chores, unpaid chores, than men. And at the weekend, it increases 4 hours more than in other European countries. Women are more and more getting their diploma, doctorates, and only leave school if obliged. They're the ones mostly affected by gender violence, domestic violence. They're the main victims of harassment in professional, school, public life. And this state of art with small differences is common to everyone in our countries. Common also is the pandemic, COVID-19, common to all. What socioeconomic consequences it didn't bring in terms of gender perspective. No one has any doubts about the crisis that exists. The effects are not always the same for men and women. And many aspects were written on the topic. Monica Ferro also mentioned that information. Therefore, signs of this time, it was written, studied in real time, on the consequences expected from what happened. Or the ILO published a report on the subject, crossing this dimension with decent work. The European Institute for Gender Equality published a report on the topic upon the request of the Portuguese presidency during the first semester 2021. The United Nations also published different studies. The OECD, the topic has been identified, and the results pointed to refer that all economic recovery policy have to take into account a gender perspective so that the advances achieved won't be questioned, and that we will not be seeing different setbacks between men and women, stereotypes that will take years and years to reconquer again. So education is the key to guarantee that we do not suffer setbacks in terms of promoting equality between men and women. Our public policies promoting equality has to start at school. Educating towards equality is educating towards the progress, a better future. This has been a strong investment in Portugal, and surely enough, we will invest even more. Training professors and others in a gender perspective so that our children are educated towards equality. Another area which is very important in terms of public investment is training, empowerment of public professionals in strategic areas such as justice, police, law enforcement, health. Our public administration should be trained to promote gender equality and should not be in any circumstance show discrimination behavior. Sometimes it can happen unconsciously because of lack of information or stereotypes, gender stereotypes. So again, training is the best solution. And therefore, finally, taking into account that our audience is constituted by women parliamentarians, women that are leaders, real life examples that people can that women can reach such positions in carrying out this position. Let me say that your role is essential to be used as a model, as an inspirational model to women, to other women and girls. Men have had many models, have been following many models, and women not. And that's why I'm calling on for you to publicize your results, participate in public debates, give visibility to your work, and the more you are known by your position, profession, competence, more women will follow your steps. As was said, the former president of Chile, Michelle Bachelet, when a woman reaches politics, maybe politics don't change. When we have many women, when there are many women in politics, politics will change. That men and women have the capacity to work together in politics, society, economy, and that together be capable of leading inclusion and equality. Thank you very much.
Muito obrigado.
Thank you very much.
Director of the Mediterranean Institute of Gender Studies, you have the floor.
Many thanks for giving me the floor. On behalf of the Mediterranean Institute of Gender Studies, it's an honor to address the inaugural session of the Women Parliamentary Forum, and we extend our thanks for inviting us to attend. I'm sorry that I cannot be there, but I have been listening with interest to all the interventions. I will now share my screen. I have a presentation to assist in the discussion and to assist those that are there to follow the presentation. Okay. So I will focus my presentation on the impact of the lockdown measures and the pandemic on women's unpaid care labor, which is a topic that many of the previous speakers have touched upon. But I will be looking at it a little bit more in depth, and I will try to keep within time and also present some recommendations for the members of the forum to take things forward. So even without the pandemic crisis and the looming economic crisis that seems to have followed, caring responsibilities usually fell heavily on women, and we have data to back that. And we've heard also from other speakers some data regarding this. So globally, women and girls are responsible for 75% of unpaid care and domestic work in homes and communities. The ILO calculates that on average, women around the world perform 4 hours and 25 minutes of unpaid care work every day, compared to 1 hour and 23 minutes for men. Before the COVID-19 outbreak, women in the European Union spent 13 hours more than men every week on unpaid care work and housework. The Gender Equality Index of the European Institute for Gender Equality of 2021 revealed that far fewer women than men participate in paid work, far more women than men work part-time, and women perform most of the care and domestic work across the EU. And here on the slide, you can see, because I wanted to share with you a little bit of the data in relation to Cyprus, which is where my organization is based, where we see that the situation regarding care work is even more severe than it is in the European Union. So do women indeed have it all? Women experience the double shift. Women are empowered, and I say that in quotation marks, because they also work outside the home in addition to taking care of their children and home without any systematic attempt to shift the distribution of care where among women and men. They also experience the triple shift, which in addition to paid work and unpaid care work, women disproportionately take care of emotional labor, ensuring the emotional well-being of children, parents, and other family members. And this mental load of worrying about the family was highlighted during the pandemic in various studies looking at the psychological impact of the pandemic and the associated restrictions on movement and so on had on women in compared to men. So women do not have it all. The way we measure our economies renders reproductive work of the reproductive work of everyday life performed largely by women and girls invisible. While this work is compensated when done by people, also women, outside the household, contributing to GDP, it is underpaid and undervalued. This invisible work contributes at least $11 trillion a year to the global economy and encompasses both reproductive and productive work on which humanity and economies depend, and yet it has remained heavily ignored. So unpaid care work, and I quote Ratsworth from a study in 2017, is routinely undervalued and exploited, generating lifelong inequalities in social standing, job opportunities, income, and power between women and men. The COVID-19 pandemic smashed the bargain made by dual earner households. And I explain, COVID-19 and associated restrictions and lockdown revealed indeed how little has been achieved in terms of redistribution of care work among women and men. State provision of childcare, performed largely by women, female domestic workers, both undervalued and underpaid, grandparents, but mostly grandmothers, did not transform in any meaningful way the gendered division of labor in the home. The bargain depended largely on childcare being outsourced to other women. Under the pandemic conditions, women in dual earner households took the hit with children out of school, heightened care needs of the elderly, and increasing demands on health and other essential services where women predominate. While many women were expected to work from home, the distinction between paid work and unpaid care work, work and family life, became blurred with associated stress and mental health risks, as I mentioned before. Women are also more likely not to have access to social protection measures put in place during the pandemic due to many women working in precarious employment. With a looming global depression, women are likely to be the first to be fired and last to be rehired in the labor market. As jobs become scarce, and given the structure of women's economic participation, as I mentioned before, more likely to be part-time, flexible, and less remunerative, women are also likely to be the ones who have to opt to give up their paid job for unpaid care work at home. This situation is compounded by the heightened risk, as we've heard from other speakers, of domestic abuse due to the widespread confinement measures in place, but also due to the pressures imposed on state institutions. And indeed, what we have found as NGOs that work on violence against women and girls is that violence against women, and particularly domestic violence and online violence, has actually increased post-pandemic. If we can say that we are in a post-pandemic era. And what I mean by that is post-restriction era. So we're finding that reports to the police, which had stayed in many countries stagnant during the lockdown measures, are indeed now increasing greatly. In terms of work-life balance, which has long been a priority in the European Union in order to increase women's labor participation, the pandemic and associated restrictions and lockdown exposed the farce of efforts to promote work-life balance through home telework, flexible work arrangements, and part-time work, as these have simply further cemented traditional gender roles. Flexible work arrangements pre-COVID simply enabled mothers to take on more unpaid care work by allowing fathers to put in additional hours of work. Under crisis conditions, many hoped that with fathers spending more time at home, it would also be an opportunity for them to engage more in caring for their children. And to some extent, this was true. However, an example of how this did not happen was data showing an increase in productivity among male researchers and academics during the lockdown, while women's productivity plummeted. It remains to be seen, with additional data to be collected, whether these changes in the way we work will lead to a sustained shift in gender norms. But without, I would say, specific measures to ensure this, we have great doubts whether it will actually happen. The disproportionate impact of the crisis on women that are particularly vulnerable to the negative and social economic impacts, including single mothers, women of color, migrants and refugee women, Roma women, and women of poor and working class background. Single parents are also more likely to be at risk of poverty compared to single people or people in couples without children. Women take up almost 85% of all single parents in the EU, and almost half are at risk of poverty or social exclusion compared to a third of single fathers. Another issue that I think is extremely important is the high number of women migrants who work in the EU's informal care sector, who look after children, older people, people who are ill, and persons living with disabilities. The pandemic has had a particularly dire impact on domestic workers around the world. One of the main consequences has been a reduction of working during the time of restrictions, was the reduction of working hours or loss of jobs, resulting in fear and restricted mobility associated with confinement measures. According to the ILO, in 2020, 72.3% of domestic workers globally were significantly impacted by the crisis. 76% of domestic workers who were significantly impacted were in informal employment. This means that the vast majority of domestic workers who lost their jobs or saw a reduction in their working hours were not registered to Social Security and thus were not eligible for unemployment insurance or any benefits that came from the state during the pandemic. But even those in informal employment suffered the impact. In Cyprus, for example, domestic workers, despite paying Social Security, did not have access to social protection measures in place and were forced to depend on charity in order to put food on the table and to send remittances back to their families. In terms of direct health impact, men appear to be at much higher risk of due to COVID-19 than women. However, as with previous health crises, as well as the 2008 global financial crisis, it is women and girls that suffer the cumulative effects of the pandemic. Given the longer-term impacts of COVID-19 on gendered and multidimensional poverty, social protection responses that do not address the fundamental drivers of gender inequality, including unpaid care and responsibilities, will entrench already existing gender inequalities. As their roles as unpaid carers becomes further entrenched, as global economic crisis looms, there is a real risk that efforts to invest in and promote gender parity and overall gender equality, as we heard from other speakers, will be undermined or even jeopardized. Immediate attention across every sector is needed to safeguard rights and investments in women and girls. Women in care work remain glaringly absent from the stimulus packages and emergency measures in many parts of the world. In Cyprus, we have not seen in the recovery plan any specific targeted measures addressing gender inequalities, including care work, and indeed, there was no real consultation with civil society and women's organizations. Despite the need to recognize and value unpaid care and domestic work and this is acknowledged in UN SDG 5, we still have a long way to go before this becomes a reality. So we need to use this opportunity, even now, where we are already late, I would say, to reduce, to redistribute, and represent care work once and for all. And some recommendations. It's important to highlight the gender differentials in the time that women and men spend on paid work, unpaid care work, and leisure time, and to raise the importance of care work in sustaining the market economy. This can be done through building an evidence base and counting women's work, as real work. Efforts in these areas may lead to an increase in the valuation of care work and help transform social norms and actually have a gender transformative impact. So some, very briefly, and I finish with this, recommendations, is in order to analyze and understand the gender impacts of the pandemic, we require, and we've heard this also from other speakers, the collection of comprehensive sex and age disaggregated data and gender statistics, including on migrant women and girls. Collection of comprehensive sex and age disaggregated will also help devise gender impact assessments and gender budgeting for all funds spent and being spent in the framework of response and recovery plans. We need investment in the care economy, developing resilient childcare services and schools so that there is a distribution of care between women and men, but also between women, men, and the state. Development of care services need to be done with a life cycle perspective, contributing to a care deal for Europe. And there should also, member states and the EU should consider developing a project to develop gender disaggregated statistics of unpaid and paid work as a basis for a new calculation of a GDP. Furthermore, we need to ensure that the EU gender equality strategy that was developed for 2020 to 2025 can adequately respond to the new and emerging needs presented by the pandemic and the long-term cumulative effect of the pandemic. And this can be done perhaps by introducing new measures that take into account new realities. And finally, women migrant workers must be included and afforded the same treatment as nationals in national and local crisis response and recovery plans across all sectors of work so that they are not left behind in line with international standards. And again, I thank you and I will close here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your participation. We have to make adapt our schedule in order to have the closing session and the next steps at noon sharp. So we ask Mrs. Alice Frade that can speak after the closing session. That is not really a closing session for. So our address and the participation from the delegations to the debate will be after the closing session. So we will resume at noon, 12 o'clock sharp, and after we will continue with our works. Thank you so much, and thank you for your understanding. And my apologies, especially to Mrs. Alice Frade. Thank you.